Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin'.
Welcome, everybody. This is Dave Lickin', and it's Monday, September 20th. My goodness, what has this year been like? It is going like a blink, and it's been so much going on, but we have a more going on, and it's exciting to have all of you with us. All you regular listeners across the country, we say thank you so much for being here. For all of you that are from Housing Matrix dialing in as a result of the connection that we have with them and Howard Boyles and his group, welcome to the program. If you haven't already done so, I encourage you to head over to www.lickinonlending.com. You'll find how to register for our weekly radio programs and hear about future upcoming guests. It's a great way. And speaking of guests, we've got on the program today Beth Ossinger and Wes Sutton, who are with AgFirst Arm Credit Bank. We're excited to hear from them in a little bit. Folks, every deal in this market counts. It is so important that you know how to be able to handle some of those properties that are more out in the rural areas that are not covered. And we're going to have a guest, both our guests, going to be telling us how AgFirst Farm Credit Bank can help you with your lending needs in those more rural areas. So stay tuned. It's going to be great. Whether you're a realtor or a loan officer, we've got some valuable information. But as we do each and every week, we want to head up and get started with the rates. Joe Farr, thank you so much for bringing us the update today. What's going on out there today, Joe?
Hey, Doug. Hey, not much so far today. It has been a little choppy. It's ahead of tomorrow's Fed meeting. It's not unusual for there to be a bit of volatility on lighter trading. But we're about where we ended Friday, so not much to report today. Last week, though, we reversed a two-week trend of higher rates, and rates fell just a little bit last week. So it was nice to see that it kind of switched from, throughout the summer, we were pretty much on a trend for lower rates. And, you know, maybe we're close to that point where we have to say the trend's kind of now become a range, and we're likely to bounce around in this area for a little bit. The likelihood of going up anytime soon for mortgage rates seems a little remote. We're in a very favorable environment for low rates with, low inflation, slow growth, high unemployment. A couple of those are good things, a couple aren't. But, it's a good environment for low rates.
Yeah, and you know what? The volatility speaks to that, too. When we start getting, when you're at the bottom or close to the bottom, you kind of watch this volatility. That's so important. Last week, there was a lot of volatility, Joe.
Well, there was. We saw a very good day on Monday with essentially no market information, no announcements, followed by a good day on Tuesday, and then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday turned the other way. So, last week, the inflation measures pretty much were as anticipated, which was indicating very low inflation. Retail sales came in stronger than expected, but that was the day we had a very good day in the market on Monday. And industrial production was a little weaker than expected, and on that day, mortgage prices fell. So the market's really, those weren't big misses, but the market didn't move in the direction you would ordinarily expect it to based on the economic data. So there's a lot of direction being sought out there.
No question. What's coming up this week?
This week the big thing is going to be the Fed meeting tomorrow. 2:15, their announcement, or around 2:15, they should put forth their announcement of the results of their meeting, and that will be no change in the Fed funds rate, as has been the case for every meeting for a long time. There's really very little expectation for any significant announcement. The Fed's not a political organization, but they probably aren't going to do much ahead of the midterm elections. And And, you know, the economic results haven't been dramatic one way or the other since the Fed meeting last. So the expectations are for no significant announcements, although the market could move based on the slightest hint of something new and different. So it'd be very important to pay attention around 2:15 Eastern time tomorrow. Also next week, there's a lot of housing data coming out, housing starts on Tuesday, existing home sales on Wednesday, and new home sales on Friday. And, you know, those are important to many of us on this call today, and we'll look to see what comes out with that. Also on Friday, last significant event of the week is the durable orders comes out at 8:30 on Friday morning.
Durable goods. Well, let's see what all of that brings us.
Yeah, be on watch tomorrow, because the Fed has become a very significant influence in the marketplace these days.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for bringing us the rates each and every week. It is so important. And, folks, the volatility we talk about can't be avoided by listening to this ad and responding to it. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be right back after this brief message.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteline.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Welcome back. If you're going to want to stay tuned all the way through this whole program, is we have Beth Oster and Wes Sutton from the Ag for Spake talking to us about the agricultural or the rural property lending that is available to you. And so without further ado, as we do each and every week, let's talk to Alice Alvey about what's going on in the legislative highway, the traffic report. Alice, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Dave. Yes, it's there's always something new and exciting to watch, and actually in some cases no news is good news. So that's my motto for this week. We don't have any brand new regulations that we have to try and decipher, because we're still trying to digest all the ones that are out there right now. So probably top on my list for the no news is good news is FHA's proposed rule that where they came out and they actually implemented through mortgagee letters the change in the CLTV requirements. They left off the table making any kind of firm response on the FHA seller concessions rule. So this is, if you remember, in a rule they put out a proposal to reduce the seller concessions from 6% down to 3%. Rumor has it, I think it was National Mortgage News, it said that Vicki Bott was quoted as along the lines of making reference that HUD is assessing all the comments. They received a lot of comments, and they're not going to necessarily jump on the 3%. I'm certainly sure it's not off the table, but that they're at least considering all of the comments that the industry presented to them to think about possibly maybe is a 4% or other number a little more palatable and still maintains the risk management that FHA wants in those scenarios. So yes, the no news is good news on that one. Now, for clarification, I want everybody to make sure they're clear on what's going on with loan officer compensation. We have a final rule from the Fed that was related to a proposed rule many moons ago, back last year. So April 1st is a real date for changing loan officer compensation structure.
And it is not an April Fool's joke.
Right. I'm sorry. You know, it's not. And actually, I think it's a couple days after that. But if we think April 1st, we'll be good. So versus the Dodd-Frank Act has its provision that's similar. There may be another rules process that comes out of that from our new financial bureau, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So just so people are clear, there are two parts of that are going after LO compensation, and one's already in play. So the other proposed rules, I guess what I want to make sure everyone's aware of is one of the truth in lending rules actually has a provision in it that would require a creditor to refund any appraisal or other fees paid by the consumer, other than a credit report fee, if the consumer decides not to proceed with a closed-end mortgage within 3 days, business days, of receiving early disclosures. So, for example, here we go, another timing requirement where not if I had a system where I could collect an appraisal quickly, appraisal fee, I would have to then, if my customer backed out, refund the fee. And so if they back, in other words, like a rescission period that would go with the application stage. Right now, our rescission only applies at the closing stage. So, and then we would have to, be, of course, have another piece of paper that tells the customer that they're entitled to this. So yeah. This is one of the proposed rules I recommend everybody making sure they give comments to. I have not been able to find a final docket number. Right now, actually, I have a Reg Z docket number of R-1390, and it's a proposed rule out for public comment. I recommend everybody take a look at that one. Some of these, when you read them, it doesn't seem like it's a big deal. You know, they're talking about ARM disclosures and so forth and changes to APR calculations, and you go, okay, I can live with that. But then, again, in the fine print, don't miss this particular aspect. I think that's a challenge to try and implement. Let's see. So that's the main crux of what we're watching for you today from a proposed rule standpoint. Now, we do have several bills that we're watching, but Congress has kind of left us alone a little bit right now. So just for everybody to know, we are watching the bill for the nonprofit licensing clarification. We have not seen that pass yet. Nonprofits who aren't licensed need to be looking at should their loan officers be licensed. And still as of this day, I don't see up on the NMLS website that they're able to actually take registrations for the bank entities yet. We're waiting on that before we know more about Bank SAFE Act implementation. And that's it for today.
That's it for today. Well, there's a lot going on. I think a lot of these folks, senators and congressmen that are in there are a little bit more focused on re-election right now. The polls the Congress has never been known to have great approval ratings, but they are absolutely in the drink, in the drain, in their ditch, in a rut of a ditch. They're just scared about this. And so I think everyone focused on this. Is it logical to think in light of some of the things that are happening, the recent election results that turned out in the last week or so, especially in Alaska, what happened in Delaware, with Christy McDonald, do you see that it is really that the pressure is going to be off of us having new legislation rolling down at us?
Well, I think you're correct on the legislation front because they are busy trying to be reelected, but it's the other side that's really putting the pressure on us now, and that's the rules process, which we're monitoring so closely for you. So the Bureau is still going to have to get implemented. They're still going to have to start giving us an indication of how, what are all the, you know, answers to the questions we have about loan officer compensation and so forth. So I think there is still plenty more to watch for since the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau will be in place, and they'll still be working.
Well, there's no question that there is an awful lot coming up, and I think one of the guests we have coming up in the future program is going to help us all get in and lobby people more effectively. I'm looking forward to a number of guests talking about this. We're trying to help the listeners listen to and get tuned up, tooled up, how to go in and work with these legislators so we can make a difference. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality trainings throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Welcome back, everybody. Stay tuned for the rest of the program because we've got Beth Ossinger and Wes Sutton from Ag First Credit, Farm Credit, talking to us in just a short moment. But as we do each and every week, we focus in on your bottom line. And nobody better to do that than Dr. Profitability, the Profit Doctor. Andy, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Appreciate that very much. Well, the topic for today is measure twice, cut once. You've heard that before, right? Measure twice, cut once. My dad used to tell me that all the time whenever we were fixing something, building something, changing something. And, you know, a friend of mine installed some new carpet in their house, and the door wasn't shut. Apparently the new pad was higher, and so they were going to cut some of the extra door off the bottom. And so they took the door off and took it outside. It was very careful. You know, you cut off a half an inch. So they laid the door down and made a straight line and cut off the door and brought it back and installed it and tried to shut it again, and it wouldn't shut. It was still sticking on the carpet. And then the guy looks up and he sees fingers coming through the top of the door. where they did measure twice, but then they cut the wrong place. So measure twice and cut once. But, you know, when we look at our businesses sometimes it feels like that in business we're going so fast. We've got so many decisions to make. We've got all these people calling, all these issues to address. And so sometimes it feels like it's just easier to maybe cut twice and only measure once. But, you know, when you look at the dynamics of a successful organization, they measure twice. They know their cost per loan, their profit per originator. They know that stuff inside and out. And so to be a successful, growing mortgage bank, it's going to be essential that we measure twice. And we need to be able to measure our results. Now, the unfortunate thing is there's so much dynamic in the market right now for mortgage bankers that in some cases the mortgage bankers are losing money. And we've seen this a couple of times where a company is actually losing money, and we will talk to the owners and say, let's cut some branches and let's cut some costs and let's raise the margins. And they go, no. Everything's fine. We believe everything will just be okay. And, you know, that's what we call the ostrich effect. The ostrich effect is where you just believe that it's going to be okay, and, you know, rarely does that ever fix itself. Financial issues don't fix themselves. Financial issues have to be addressed. And so it's important to understand this because this is usually driven by fear, and fear can lead to paralysis. So it's important that with all the changes that we're facing today in mortgage lending, that we accept the fact that there's significant change. Sometimes significant change creates fear, and fear can drive paralysis because the ostrich effect almost always ends in disaster. You've got to know where you're going. You've got to know where you are today, how to fix it, and how to move forward. And given so much turmoil today, you know, you really need to get help from someone who's really experienced. If you look at bigger companies, and I keep mentioning that because we want to model ourselves after successful companies. And one of the things successful companies have is they have boards, whether if it's an official board of directors or if it's an advisory board. And when you look at any public company just about, and you look at the annual report, and you look at the pictures of the directors, one thing that's almost common among those directors is they have gray hair. Well, except for the women. But the guys all have gray hair.
Look good.
Yeah, a little bit of color helps there. but there's a reason why. There's a reason why public companies have board of directors who have gray hair. It's because they've got experience. They've got 20, 25, 30, 35, even 40 years of experience, and that is incredibly valuable. You know, in today's world, we've got so much happening so fast, it's really important to get advice from people that are experienced and can bring their experience to bear, measure carefully, and then take action to make your business better. You know, I remember one of the quotes that Ross Perot is famous for saying is, if you see a snake, kill it. You have to be proactive. You know, right, we're in Texas. You see a snake, what are you going to do, leave it? No, you're going to deal with it because someone else might get bitten by it. If a branch is losing money,
you need to go ahead. I'm sorry.
If a branch is losing money, you got to fix it. So go ahead, Dave.
No, I was just saying, he's also the one that did the famous four, you know, measure. I just hear him in that one election, you measure twice, you know, cut left. He coined a lot of great Texas expressions. You're absolutely right.
Do you have to measure the snake?
You know, now that they've got regulation, if the snake's less than 3 feet, you can't kill it because it's not grown enough. So yours is to walk up to a 3-foot rattlesnake and measure it.
I guess that doesn't apply to counting. If you have a 3-foot problem, you want to deal with this. That's so good.
Yeah. So, you know, but if you got a problem, fix it. If you've got a branch that's losing money, fix it. Well, that presumes that you know you've got a branch that's losing money. Well, how do you know your branch is losing money unless you have branch profitability reports? You also should have loan-level profitability reports and reports that show you the profit for every loan officer that's in your team. Now, remember, we're going to talk about this a lot more in the next show. We've talked about it before. When it comes to originators, you've got to be paying a minimum wage, and you've got to pay them overtime if they're working over 40 hours a week. You've got to capture all that information. So make sure you're making money on your originators, because you could be paying them money and them not generating any production. So the days of just having an originator that didn't do anything hang around are coming to an end.
They certainly are, Mr. Shell.
Yes. Well, as I get to the point here, kind of wrap up, it's really important to also have operational efficiency. Now, when you think about operational efficiency, let's talk about lawyers. Almost every mortgage company needs help from a lawyer, but not very many mortgage companies have a full-time attorney. Some of the bigger companies have a full-time attorney that's a general counsel, but most of the time, mortgage bankers hire attorneys to help them with this stuff because it's not economical to have a full-time lawyer for a mortgage bank, so they outsource their legal support. Well, what about accounting? Mortgage banks should focus on what they do best, which is making loans. And I think it's good to let experts deal with the issues like law and accounting by outsourcing those to people that are experts on that team. You know, one of the principles of success for a business is any business should focus on their core competency. And for mortgage banks, that's usually not accounting. Now, you've got to have accounting to be successful. You've got to measure results. You've got to measure twice, cut once. But in order to do that, you've got to have the right answer. And a lot of times mortgage bankers don't know how to get the right answer. So one option is to outsource your accounting. Really, the key point today, Dave, is react. Immediately react to financial issues. If you see something, you see a snake, you kill it. If you've got a branch that's losing money, you adjust for it. If you've got to pay a loan officer's overtime, you start doing that and adjust how that affects your profitability. You've got to measure your business carefully, get support from experienced advisors. Don't try to do this all on your own. Create a plan and then implement the changes to make your business better. And that's the Profit Doctor segment for today.
That's it. That's good, everybody. Thank you so much, Profit Doctor, for coming on and bringing it to us each and every week. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Licka with Licka on Lending. We're honored today to have two guests with us from the Agfirst Farm Credit Bank. We have Beth Ossinger, and we Director of Correspondent Lending, as well as Wes Sutton, Senior Supervisory Counsel for the bank. Both of you, Wes, Beth, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dave.
Appreciate you being here with us today. I think a lot of our listeners would like to know, who is the Farm Credit Bank? Tell us about it. What is the Farm Credit System?
This is Beth, and Farm Credit System actually has been around for a very long time. We were actually established back in 1916, And if I could pass that on to Wes to give you a little bit more of a background on that.
Sure. The Farm Credit System is a government-sponsored enterprise created in the Farm Credit Act of 1916. And over time, the Farm Credit System, like anything else, has evolved. Present day, we basically are chartered to meet the needs of rural residents and farmers across the country. And the Ag First Bank is the bank that discounts to farm credit lenders along the East Coast, all the way from Delaware to Florida, across to Texas, and then we have the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. And so we primarily focus on ag loans, but we also make loans to rural residents, and that's kind of what Beth's department does, is to handle that rural lending function.
Well, one of the things that we have is very fortunate that Alice works with you, Beth, very closely, and I think has spoken at a number of your events. I'd love to invite Alice into the dialogue here with us. And Alice, are you there?
Yes, I am, Dave.
You've worked
to the program, Beth.
Thank you.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I just wanted to, say that it's amazing to me how long this has been around and how few people really understand that it does help with basic single-family residential programs that you offer financing for. You know, it doesn't have to be a 1,000-acre farm. So tell us a little bit about how the farm system's organized. How does that work?
Well, it's actually organized. My department in particular is we have the mission of providing financing to rural America. And our definition of rural America is a lot different than the USDA's rule on the rule. And we're actually a population of 2,500 or less. And as you can imagine, if you look at the map of the United States, that takes up a lot of the United States. And what we do is we actually offer all of the Fannie Mae, or I should say most of the Fannie Mae programs, and all of the credit is ran through DU, and we underwrite to Fannie Mae guidelines. And the unique thing about Ag First is we are able to actually offer unique properties, and those properties that other commercial banks or community banks may shy away from.
Are you finding that that you're busy with these programs? I'm asking a question I already know the answer to based on some of our conversations leading up to that, but I think that listeners would be fascinated to know that you guys are just being inundated. Talk to you about where's all the business coming from, Beth?
We are very busy. In fact, next month, October, we will probably have the second largest production month that we have had since my department was established about 15 years ago. And we're getting the business all over the United States, but mainly right now we're getting a lot of business from Georgia, North Carolina, and Missouri.
Well, that is go ahead.
I was just going to say, and yours is a correspondent arrangement, pure correspondent, where it's only the other lender must be doing the underwriting and must be funding and closing the loan in their own name up in advance, and you're just purchasing the loan after that point, after closing.
Actually, yes, with a little bit of a caveat. We actually underwrite here about 98% of our production. We don't really delegate that out, and the reason why is because Farm Credit Administration, who is our regulator, there are certain things that we have to meet, mainly the population dwelling, the population requirement as well as some other dwelling requirements. So instead of the correspondent being responsible for that, we go ahead and do that here at our shop.
Yeah, one thing that would be important to point out, we're learning what you are, but I think it's also important to look at what you are not. Could you run through, Beth, and help kind of establish some boundaries for our listeners? Who are you and who are you not specifically?
Well, let's talk about who we're not first, and we are not USDA. We were talking earlier on the pre-program that we do not have income limitations on our programs like USDA does. We are not Farm Bureau or Farm Credit Bureau. There is no such thing as the Farm Credit Bureau. It's just Farm Bureau. And we are not a government agency. We're actually a co-op. We're a co-op that is owned by other co-ops. In other words, how we are organized is that we have what's called associations. Our associations own the bank, and the associations are actually owned by the stockholders. The stockholders actually could be the farmers and the ranchers who buy from the or borrow from the associations.
And it's an arrangement that is not dissimilar from how the federal home loan banks are organized, where the member banks discount borrow from the FLBs. They, in fact, are set up very similar. So we have these 22 direct lender associations that, in fact, own stock in AgFirst, borrow from us. We, in turn, lend to them, and then we, in addition, operate this unit that purchases home loans, not just from Farm Credit, but from other lenders as well.
I think it's important to understand the nature of a co-op, and I think that, Wes, that kind of adds a little more flavor into kind of how this thing functions. And it's something different than what a lot of people are used to selling into. So the number one thing I want to bring up that Alice points out is that you do underwrite the loans at this point. It's not that someone else is delegated to underwrite them and can ship them to you for purchase. Is that correct?
That is correct. We underwrite them here, yes.
All right, so that's one designation. So from a risk standpoint, I mean, this may be a product. A lot of people don't go into using products, Beth and Wes, because they are afraid of, you know, if I fund it and put it on my warehouse line, will they buy it? It sounds like the way you're operating, it meets that, or it addresses that risk for a lot of people that are concerned about getting loans stuck in their warehouse line.
That is correct.
All right, good. Let's talk about the market you serve, because I think this really, listeners, is the crux and the real key to this whole program. Every deal counts, as I said earlier in the program. Every deal does. And every chance you can pick up one or two more loans a month in some market, that's going to be great. Realtors, if you're looking at listing a property or if you're looking at showing a property and you wonder, should I do that because I really wonder if there's financing, I tell you, this program really reaches out to a huge segment of the market. So, Beth and Wes, let's start with you, Beth. Get into describing and defining for us what is rural, what is a rural area? Where are the boundaries of that?
Well, as I said earlier, the rural area is a population of 2,500 or less. And pretty much if it is an unincorporated area, you're pretty much going to be right on the market. We also allow properties in rural areas where it's underdeveloped by 25%. The unique things about our properties is we do not have any limitation on the number of acres that we can allow. Typically, we do see 30 to 35 acres in our properties. We do not have any limitation on the age of our comps, nor do we have limitation on the distance of our comps, but it needs to be addressed by the appraiser, and it needs to make sense. It can't be, you know, 100 miles away. So that's pretty much it. We do have some other unique things, though. Our dwelling values, which comes from the cost approach on the appraisal, has to represent at least 35% of the loan amount.
Okay.
And we also do not allow any investment or second homes. It's only for owner-occupied single families.
And for how about outbuildings?
Yes, we do allow outbuildings. The only caveat with that is that the as-is value needs to be less than 20% of the appraised value, and it needs to be typical for the area.
A lot of people are start extrapolating and saying, oh, great, now I can send that land loan over to you. Do you do land loans?
My department here does not do any land loans or full-time farm loans. Those actually are done through the associations. And if anyone is on the call and wants to know, well, how do I find these associations, there are actually two great websites that you could go to. The first one is fca.gov, and you just want to look up the directory. It's called the FCS directory, and they're listed there by the bank or actually by the state. The other website that you can go to is farmcreditnetwork.com, And there you would actually put in the state as well as the county, and it'll show the association that is able to do loans in that area.
Let's get a little more specific about what programs are available, Beth.
Well, we do offer most of the Fannie Mae programs. We do have a couple of unique programs. Manufacturing housing, as long as it's double wide or larger. We do allow for unique forms of housing, such as geodesic homes, log homes, and other unique forms of housing. We also have something that's kind of interesting, Amish and Mennonite program.
Interesting.
Yes, because the Amish and the Mennonite, believe it or not, they do not believe in hazard insurance. And
amazing.
Yes, against their rules. So we have a program that we actually make sure that the ordinance will cover the house if something should happen to that house.
You know, one thing, what I find comical is you're talking about the Amish and the Mennonite community is that all these loans are manually underwritten. I was thinking how appropriate for that community that they would all be doing, because everything they do, it seems to be handmade. That's really amazing. Talk about the debt ratios for a minute. What is the also loan-to-value ratio? Let's cover those two things.
Well, just specifically on the Amish and the Mennonite, we would go up to 85%, and our debt ratio would be 42%.
Wow, that's pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
That's good. Anything else about the loan programs that we should specifically really get into, Beth?
Not really. I mean, everything else is credit. If the borrower is a good borrower and they can get ran through DU is no problem. It's mainly just the property characteristics. And if it meets just a couple of those requirements that we have, the loan is probably going to get underwritten, approved, and ready for us to buy it.
And
that's
Mr.
Mailer. Go ahead, Joe.
I just wanted to add these are 30-year fixed-rate loans if you want, right? It's not like a community bank's ARM program or 5-year balloons or something like that.
No, they're not. They're 30-year fixed rates, 20-year, 15-year, 10-year. We also do ARMs. Flex 97. Yep. And we're able to MI. Oh, go ahead.
No, that's good. In fact, I want to say a special thank you to the folks at PMI who introduced us to you, Beth. I mean, Alice was fortunate enough. She's known you and speaks very highly of you, your organization, and your whole system, I think, that you're set up with. And I think it's just fascinating. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
It's time for the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Del Mar Data Track.
Last Thursday, Nick Timorous posted a story on the Wall Street Journal blog that addresses a question I've had in my head for a while. Where's the foreclosure flood? Nick points to several factors that could be driving the lack of REOs, including the fact that many delinquent loans are being cured either naturally or through mods, that banks are getting better at approving short sales, and investors are buying properties from banks at auction before they become REOs. He shares some differing opinions as to what the future will hold and includes a handy foreclosure flowchart. You can check out the story called Where's the Foreclosure Flood at blogs.wsj.com. Also, I found an article by Carolyn Kemp on housingmatrix.com that breaks down the MBA's recent Mortgage Bankers Performance Report. The highlight is that independent mortgage bankers made an average of $917 on each loan in the second quarter of 2010. That's a significant increase over the $606 they got in the first quarter. The increase was driven by a rise in average production volume for each firm that resulted in decreased operating expenses, down to $4,677 per loan. This article includes other great stats, such as the net cost to originate and personnel expenses. You can find this article on the MBA study for second quarter 2010 at housingmatrix.com. Those were the stories that caught my attention this past week for the Mortgage Minute. This is Rob Katz with DMD, and I'll be back next week with the news I think you should know about.
This has been the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Del Mar Data Track. Catch Rob's news of the week right here on the Lincoln on Lending Show or online at dmdinc.com.
PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Licken with Licken on Lending, and we have two guests from Ag First Farm Credit Bank. We have Beth Ossinger, Director of Correspondent Lending, and Beth Sutton. Beth's been running the program there. I believe she's been running the program since 2005, if I'm not mistaken, Beth. But you've worked in a variety of institutions and banks and mortgage companies, and you have, it looks like you've lived around at least four different states, so you're familiar with what the whole part of the aspect of the industry is. And if I'm not mistaken, correct me on this, but you're servicing a portfolio of $1.8 billion. So good to have you on the program and tell our listeners how they can increase their income and get a few more deals closed with your programs. Appreciate both of you being here.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, we do have a servicing portfolio of $1.8 billion, and we do not sell any of our loans currently. We buy the whole loan, and we keep them and service them.
Wes, are you finding that some of the issues, I mean, your responsibility there is you focus on the regulatory and the legislative matters out there. Are you finding a lot of the legislation that could be impacting these programs, Wes?
Well, I'll be quite candid with you, and maybe anecdotal, but I do think from the Ag First standpoint that perhaps some of the regulatory initiatives have probably benefited us. I will say that, you know, when we talk about the competition in rural markets where you don't have a large presence by your Chase and your Bank of America and some of those, the largest competition might have been a community bank or a credit union. And, of course, we've got a product differentiation in that we can go longer in many cases. The cost of compliance, in particular, the new regulations involving truth in lending, the changes to RESPA that required folks to buy all new software, the costs that are being added on with the SAFE Act and so forth, I think has had a chilling effect on some of these small lenders where the compliance cost has just made it difficult for them to continue to stay in the market. So, you know, it's a cost that everyone has felt, certainly on the farm credit side. We've spent a tremendous amount of time doing training and updates and getting everybody and our customers on board. But certainly I think it has benefited us and that some of these smaller institutions, the regulators are simply pricing them out of the market with the cost of compliance.
You know, I think that's a really good point, and even more so why people need to be informed about these programs. So, okay, we got a little bit of information, some of the programs do. I think we have some insights, a lot more that can be learned. And Beth, before we forget about that and move on too quickly, what is the website so people can go learn more about you all?
Our website is www.agfirstmortgageloans.com.
And all the information of how to apply there is how to get approved with your institution?
Yes, on the website there is a link saying become a partner. And if you click on that link, there is an application to download and just need to fill it out in its entirety and send it on to me. I'm the one who actually approves them. And
yes.
I don't know if I should let everyone know that, but yes, I am.
Well, if you could see the picture that's up on the website, if you haven't been there, head on over to lickitonlending.com and you will see a nice She's got to be one. If she's half as pleasant as her picture is, then you're going to enjoy working with her. Beth, tell us about how to get approved. What are the requirements, minimum net worth, all the steps to get in relationship with you? Do you require bonding requirements? So we really get into getting the relationship established, what are the minimum requirements, and then what are you looking for on an ongoing basis from those that are approved, that become approved with you?
Okay, sure. We're like everybody else. We look for mainly stability. We're looking for companies that know how to do mortgage banking, have been in the mortgage banking for a while, and we look at, in particular, all the resumes of the key people that are going to be sending their loans to us. We also look at financials. I want to see at least 2 years' worth of financials, and I'm looking for liquid assets. Yes, I want to make sure that there is some viable financial strength with the company. Ag First and the Farm Credit District is very conservative, and we want to make sure that we have some very good, strong companies that we're dealing with.
Liquidity is more important than the net worth, but do you have a minimum net worth requirement?
Yes, looking for $500,000 minimum net worth. We do look for E&O insurance. We look for Fidelity Bond. We also look at references. We call and talk to the people that are on the application, and I actually call and talk and make sure that there's nothing out there that we should be aware or concerned about.
One of the questions is, if anyone listening to this program, Beth, is going to be wondering, it says, gosh, they already got more business than they can handle. I mean, are they really approving more companies? Are you welcoming? Is the door open? Are the lights? I mean, is the welcome mat out in front of the Ag First door?
Yes, actually it is. And I'm getting a lot of applications, and I have been probably in the last 8 months. And we are seeing an increased activity from outside of the Farm Credit District. So, yes, we are open, and we would welcome the opportunity to help everyone be able to serve the rural communities.
Well, I think one of the things that's so key is the exceptions that you make in the property, right? So it's from a credit standpoint, credit, income, and assets, all that is standard secondary market guides, and where the real benefit of the program comes from how you underwrite an appraisal differently, which I think is so needed in the market. And people, I think, have forgotten that that might exist. You know, we've all really kind of felt that, is there any manual underwriting left? And you guys really answer that question. The answer is yes, there is still manual underwriting left.
That's right.
It's refreshing to hear that we're going back and to using carbon-based systems. Everyone listens to this program, they hear you talk about silicone-based systems, which is automated systems, versus the carbon-based systems, which is us human beings. It's really refreshing to hear that there's some common sense underwriting, which is brought about through the seasoned veterans out there in the underwriting area. What other aspects of the program, again, that we may not have talked about that are important you'd want to highlight, Beth? Or Alice?
Mainly, I just want to talk about the acreage and the rural area. That's mainly what our program is all about. And I know in the history, a lot of borrowers would have to parcel out a portion of their land because other investors or other banks had a limitation on the acreage that they could have. And we've never had to do that, and we continue to not do that.
Alice, anything else? You've been in their offices. You've had a chance to work with Beth and train some of her people. Anything else that is unique that the listeners should know about the program, Alice?
Well, I think Beth's done a good job of describing it. You know, I think some companies, when they hear, oh, wow, they take manufactured homes, you know, their wheels start turning. You know, it's still, right, it's still going to be, you know, smart underwriting. I have to have good data. So, you know, I think that's what's important that Beth has highlighted, the larger acre parcels, areas where you just know comps are going to be far away, and then, you know, just the idea that it still has to be a good credit loan. There aren't exceptions on that side. Beth is, and your credit overlays, you really don't have any big credit overlays on top of that. You have a couple, but it's, it's not insurmountable.
That's right. Yeah.
That's That's refreshing to hear, Beth.
Yes, yeah. It's mainly Fannie Mae guidelines, and that's what we go by. But you're right, Alice. A lot of people say, oh, you're doing manufactured housing. I've got this loan, and, well, it's still got to be in a rural area, and it still needs to be standing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you still have all the same foundation requirements and so forth that a standard secondary market product would need.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Jill, jump in here. Is there anything that you want to know that you were thinking about that we have not covered relating getting approved and some of the rates and the secondary marketing aspects of this, Jill?
Well, two things. One is to ask, are there any unique system requirements either to produce the closing documents or to communicate with you?
Wait, say that one more time. I'm sorry.
If somebody out there is not doing these loans right now, they may be thinking, well, what's involved in being able to do these loans from a system perspective? Is there anything unique in the documentation requirements?
There actually is not. We instituted a new system probably about 2.5 years ago, and anyone who is originating a mortgage can actually export that mortgage out of their system and import it into our system. Our system allows for DU to be ran through our system, and when you are ready to submit that loan to our underwriting group, you would actually just upload the documents to our secure website. It gets attached directly to that loan and is sent into the underwriting queue. When the loan is ready to close, we do offer to do closing packages for our customers, but we also accept closing packages or documentations from other institutions that are used to closing loans. So, no, there are not any unique requirements as far as documentation goes.
Okay, good. And then the second question, it sort of starts with a comment you made earlier in the pre-call about no buybacks, and you attributed that, I think, to underwriting yourself. There are other people that underwrite loans themselves, but there are lots of buybacks. So in this current environment, I think understanding how you've made that work would be very important for those who are considering taking the risk of making a rural loan.
Okay, sure. Well, we have been around for about 15 years, and I've been here for about 5.5 years. And you're right. In the history that I have been here, we have not had any institution buy back a loan. And I do believe it's because we underwrite the majority of the loans here. We are conservative. We never got into any of the no-doc loans or liar loans, if you will. And we haven't changed our philosophy. So the philosophy we had 15 years ago as far as a quality loan is the same as what we held for those 15 years and still have. So the risk of actually having a loan to be bought back if you're a correspondent is a lot less than what it would be maybe with other institutions. Now, I'm not going to say it's never going to happen. It just hasn't happened yet.
I would jump in here and add, too, that just the nature of the properties that we're talking about, where you've got someone who's got a home with a lot of acreage, they may have a little more equity in it, perhaps. They've also maybe dealing with property that's been in the family and things of that nature, and we've got borrowers and whatnot that are usually willing to help work things out if we have an issue. But it has not happened so far.
That, I would agree with that. Our credit score of our borrowers is over 750 is our average.
Wow, that's very strong. Very, very strong.
Yes.
Prophet Doctor, you've been mighty quiet in this. Do you have any questions for our guests here today as we wrap up this segment?
Well, I was just thinking about what an amazing product it is. It's a unique product, and it's something that's serving an important niche in the market, you know, especially if you're a mortgage lender in a rural area like a community bank or you know, you don't want to put a 30-year fixed-rate loan on your books, but you want to be able to offer that product. So I think this is a great option for that. You know, actually, the other thing I was thinking about is that because it's mainly rural, and I was thinking about Alice up in around Detroit, that I don't remember seeing a lot of rural in Detroit, but I guess you get outside of Detroit, and just like Dallas, lots and lots of land outside of the big cities. So
even
though
we have lots of rural.
Yeah. So, you know, you don't have to be in Wyoming for this product to work. I mean, it just takes get outside of the major areas, whether if it's Dallas or Detroit or whatever, and you can have a borrower who could benefit from this kind of a product.
That's right. That's exactly right. And it's even though our acreage is a really good program, we also do PUDs, but as long as they are outside the city limits in a rural area, we will do those loans as well.
Excellent, excellent. We are just about out of time for this segment, Beth and Wes, and we want to thank you so much for being with us today. We'll come back, and we're getting a lot of questions in on this. And so let's get that website out for everybody again one more time. It is www. Give me the rest of it, Beth.
AgFirstMortgageLoans.com.
AgFirstMortgageLoans.com. Folks, go out there and investigate this program. It just takes one or two extra loans a month to help that bottom line. And I think, as the profit doctor might attest, it would be well worth the ROI, your time invested to do this. Folks, thank you so much. Wes, thank you so much for being on the program with us today. We really do appreciate it. And look forward to talking to you more and hearing from you again. Thank you both.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Good to be with us. Folks, we'll be right back as we start looking at some of the future. We'll be right back after this brief word.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lincoln on Lending Show.
Good to have you back, everybody. That was a good program. Again, the purpose of our program is to bring you each and every week information that's going on that I think is relevant to the whole industry and relevant to you making more money. So, folks, we just want to say thank you for tuning in each and every week. As we go to wrap in this program, let's open the phone line up again to Alice and Joe and Ann. Any parting comments that you have for our listeners today? Alice?
Yeah, actually, I just want to remind people that Fannie Mae did put out an announcement that the Home Valuation Code of Conduct is still in place until the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau actually comes up with their alternative. So even though Dodd-Frank set a sunset for that, you do have to make sure you're following all those procedures. And then don't forget, October 4th is when the FHA mortgage insurance premiums change. We go to a 1% upfront and a much higher monthly premium at 90 and 85 basis points based on the LTV.
Good, good, good. I'm also looking forward to having dinner. Andy and I are looking forward to having dinner with you. Wish we could get Joe to fly up there to Dallas. You're going to be speaking at which conference is it again?
I'm going to be conducting a session with Wetzel's Trot in the MBA Quality Assurance Conference that is being held in Dallas this week.
Well, if anyone who's listening to the program is in that area, go walk up and see Alice. We'll be having dinner, so you can't join in the dinner because we just really guard our time with Alice. Joe, it's so good to have you on there. Hey, what's going on with rates? Any updates on activity that you need to report here in the last minute? We have less than 2 seconds.
Yeah, the MBS prices have improved during our call. We're now up 3 at the high for the day and off a low of minus 2, so it's moving in the right direction.
That's good. That's great news. Prophet Doctor, what's your final parting words of wisdom?
If you've got originators, and if you better be paying them overtime. If you're not, you better have a plan that shows that they're outside salespeople.
I could ask for any better because we've got Tony Musgrave on next week to talk about loan officer compensation. Folks, you're not going to want to miss that program either.
Don't miss any of our programs. They're all good. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. We look forward to having you back next week. And again, special thank you goes out to our fellow friends at Housing Matrix. If you have not gone over there, check it out. Look at that website because you can register for updates. Look at the tips, tools, and tricks that they have. There's abundance of wonderful things there. Go out to that website. Check us out. You can go there by lickingonlending.com or you can go by listening, going to housingmatrix.com. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a great week.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Albee, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.